Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Thursday, December 14th, 2017. I'm your host, Scott Burton. It's good to have you with us, as always. On today's show, Lance Twitchell and Alice Taff will preview their Friday evening at Egan presentation. Lori Hegel, Bob Rayfeld, and Jamie Waste will highlight a recent Juno Community Foundation grant for the JAM program. Niels Warnick, director of the Alaska Audubon Office, will preview his Thursday presentation. And Nancy DeCherney will highlight this weekend's arts and entertainment happenings with Arts Up. Those interviews, national native news, bird note, music, and more right here, live and local on a Juno afternoon. It's currently 46 degrees here in the capital city with cloudy skies and rain.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Members of a Washington, D.C.-based grassroots group say they were behind Wednesday's online campaign aimed at the Washington football team's name. Fake news articles with an updated logo and mascot appeared online claiming the team changed its name to the Washington Redhawks. The group Rising Hearts released a statement taking claim for the action, calling it a culture jam. Culture jamming is a tactic used in social activism, creating fake or hoax stories, logos, or products to draw attention to an issue and or critique it. Rebecca Nagel is a member of Rising Hearts and one of the organizers behind the Red Hawks online action.
One of the reasons we use this tactic is because we feel as Native people, we face this giant wall of erasure and invisibility where it is really difficult to get accurate representation of ourselves in mainstream media. And so we use the culture jam to disrupt the misrepresentation that's promoted by the Washington football team and to promote our vision of how we want to be represented in mainstream society.
Nagel says the group wanted to show the NFL team it would be easy to change the name.
In the first 12 hours of the website launching, all our websites actually received over 500,000 unique visitors. And to put that in perspective, the people who visited our websites Wednesday could fill FedEx Stadium five times over. Beyond the visitors to the websites, an exponentially higher amount of people saw the culture jam on social media and in the news.
Nagel says she saw much positive response, but also acknowledges there are people who are not pleased.
We're open for dialogue and feedback with people, and, you know, our goal is to take this platform that the culture jam created and to really share it with the leaders that have been working on this issue for decades. And so while this may just be a moment, hopefully we can use it to shed more light on this issue, and in this moment of that, you know, sort of veil of invisibility being lifted, really use it to get our message across to the non-Native world.
Native advocates, tribes, and national Native organizations are among those who've long called for a name change, saying the R word is a racial slur. The football team released a statement Wednesday saying its name is still the same and will remain that way for the future. Rising Hearts is hosting a Change the Name rally at the football team stadium on Sunday. Native organizations are among those watching the Federal Communications Commission's vote Thursday on net neutrality rules. Native groups, including Native Public Media, have said placing barriers on the Internet would impact tribal communities. Advocates say Native communities rely on the Internet for education, health, career, and other resources. Democratic senators are urging the FCC not to repeal the rules, which they say are in place to protect free and open Internet. The Lakota Nation Invitational is underway in Rapid City, as South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbold reports.
Basketball does gather most of the attention in the Lakota Nation Invitational. And on the boys' side this year, a new champion will replace Winnebago, Nebraska. The two-time defending champ is not entered in this year's field. In girls' play, the defending champion is Little Wound. That school defeated Crazy Horse 75-34. In a first-round game on Wednesday. 16 teams are involved in each tournament, which goes out at sites around the city, but centers on the Rushmore Plaza Civic Center. Competitions are held in golf, volleyball, and wrestling, but the event isn't just for athletes in the mainstream events. Students may participate in archery, hand games, and a Lakota language bowl. The LNI also gives students a chance to develop a business plan, display artworks, or take part in a poetry slam. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbold.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by Drumbeat Indian Arts, offering authentic Native American recordings and religious herbs, craft supplies, books, and a wide selection of Pendleton blankets at drumbeatindianarts.com. Holiday delivery on orders placed by December 15th. Support by AARP, creating and connecting you to unique tools and content like Native Origins, incorporating Native American culture with recipes inspired by indigenous foods. More at aarp.org/Native Origins.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
And you're listening to a Juno afternoon here on Thursday, December 14th. Scott Burton, your host today. It's about 6 minutes past the top of the hour. And in the studio now is Lori Hege. She is the founder of JAM, or Juno Alaska Music Matters Program, also a teacher out of Glacier Valley. And also Bob Rayfield. He works with the Juno Community Foundation. He's a board member, treasurer, and directs the Youth Field of Interest Fund. Welcome to the show, both of you.
Hi.
Thank you.
It's nice to have you. So JAM just received this wonderful grant from the Juno Community Foundation, and we're going to be talking a little bit about that as we go. But, Lori, what is JAM?
Juno Alaska Music Matters is a it's actually a social service program. We use music to build school readiness skills and positive youth development strengths for kids. And because music is often too expensive for your average family to afford, it's about $1 a minute, we make sure that every child has the opportunity to learn how to play an instrument at an early age. So all kindergartners and first graders in Glacier Valley, River Bend, and Auk Bay. Those are our three JAM schools currently, but we hope to expand to others in the school district. Get 90 minutes of violin to help build focus, impulse control, social skills, so that those lifelong skills that they can develop through music isn't just a privatized opportunity, it's a public one.
It's accessible. When did this journey start for you as the founder?
It started back in 2009. I received a fellowship through the TED Prize. Dr. Abreu of Venezuela was using music for social change and won the prize to train 50 musicians passionate for music for social change to bring that to the world. And I was very fortunate to be one of those 50 and come back to Juno, where I had hoped that we could start a program. And because of the community support, like the Juno Community Foundation, who sees the value of music beyond just learning the instrument, but sees what it does for the welfare and health of our kids, we've been able to grow from starting from 65 students to nearly 600.
Wow.
In K-5.
That's great. I have a lot more questions about this wonderful program here in a second. Bob, tell us a little bit about the Juno Community Foundation and how these folks got on your radar.
Sure. Well, about in the last year, we've been working on developing what we call the Field of Interest Funds, and they're kind of broad areas of development that we've kind of undertaken. We're working right now in these areas of youth and parks and trails, education, arts and culture, and health and social services. And Rick Shattuck and I think they just drew names out of the hat and said, okay, you and Rick are going to do youth funds. And we went, okay, you know. And the beauty of it was we kind of got to define the program that we wanted to create for our Field of Interest Fund. We sat down early on and decided that what we'd like to see with our youth Field of Interest Fund was to be able to provide opportunities for young kids to participate in cultural and artistic and athletic activities regardless of their economic status. So you can kind of start seeing right now how our first program that we looked at really dovetails nicely into what we established as our mission statement, giving every kid an opportunity to learn to play music, and then kind of the secondary effect of how it prepares them for school. We decide, boy, this is an easy one to take on, you know. So,
okay. Lori, can you give us an example of maybe one of your students that you've coached over the years or taught and how this has affected them positively?
Yes, our oldest students now are in seventh grade, and from one of the lessons that I learned in Venezuela was that if a child knows four notes, they can teach somebody who only knows three. So from the very start, even in kindergarten, we look for students who can be teaching assistants to help. And that whole, many years of seeing themselves as leaders and that they give back to a place where they feel confident and competent and caring, it really, they keep coming back. So we now have seventh graders, sixth graders who, after school, come back to Glacier Valley to be teaching assistants and volunteer. And that's exactly the hope that we have, is that this program develops citizens and active citizenship in our community.
Yeah, I'm hearing a lot of social interaction, mentorship, leadership. Maybe it's going to be great if they become good musicians, but that's secondary?
Well, that's a really good question, because when you have this larger goal of social skills and leadership and citizenship, you end up getting incredibly qualified and high skills in music. It's that social aspect that I think really drives the kids. I had one teacher say, yeah, private lessons, one-on-one, is sometimes hard for a child to be motivated. But when they're in an orchestra with everyone around them, there really is a motivating factor of that being in a group and being in an orchestra. So from the very start, they work in groups of 25 kids.
Remind us again where you are now, and thanks to this grant, where you're going to be.
We are in three schools, K-5 at this point, and thanks to the Juno Community Foundation, JAM has hopes to expand to other schools. We focus on Title I, where families are, there are students that are in free and reduced lunch, which means that they're at a poverty level and may not be able to afford something like this. And so we are hoping next year with our strategic plan to move into, expand to another elementary school. And one of the things we wanted to share is that it's not just violin or cello, bass, and viola, but we have music tech, musical theater. It moves into an after school in second grade. So students are at our school being involved in all of these other types of programs that feed that social emotional skills that a lot of our students need.
Okay. You must be very proud.
I am. And it's definitely a group effort. I think that's a big piece of the success, is that it's a community. This community is school district working together, and really appreciate the investment that the Juno Community Foundation has given us since the start of JAM.
Bob, I know that JAM is among several beneficiaries of your actions. Do you want to share those now, or are we going to talk about those later?
Well, the JAM presented us with a five-year expansion plan, and so it was about a $160,000 target. And so, this first part of it is just, we're implementing literally the first phase of this. There's components for sending some of these older kids to fine arts camp over in Sitka next year, and then eventually these kids are going to move into middle school. I think that's what Lori's looking to do, is kind of take these kids and probably some of the better students who really have a music aptitude and get them a little bit more focused on music, So we're looking at that. We're looking at funding that whole piece, and it will probably come in as we go. We'll be out trying to match some donors that share the same enthusiasm for JAM here and are willing to become participants. We're also looking at some other programs right now. We're looking at the STEM. There's a lot of activity going on in the science, technology, engineering, and math. And so we're trying to figure out how we can do something that would support that. We're looking at maybe a science fair project. We're looking at a possibly an overall scholarship program. At the end of the school year, there's all these wonderful camps that take place right at the end, all throughout the summer, everything from Necco Ranch to the STAR program, basketball and Little League, whatever. So there's some talk about trying to maybe come up with a uniform scholarship program, that we focus on these youngsters so they all have a chance chance again to participate in these same activities. I raised three daughters. We used a lot of extracurricular activities. It's a great building block to education. It supplements education. What they learn in these activities, you know, spills over into making them better students and really ultimately better citizens, you know. So
if somebody wants to find more information about the Juno Community Foundation, where's the best place to do that?
Oh, well, we have a really nice website, like everyone there, Juno Community. It's www.junocf.org. I think if you just Google Juno Community Foundation, you'd find us. Our number down there is 523-5450.
So. And, Lori, when can we see a jam related concert or something in the near future?
Sure. Well, we just had an Informants yesterday, and then tomorrow at 1:45 at Glacier Valley, we have our first graders performing from 1:45 to 2:15 in the Glacier Valley Gym. It will be about 75 of them.
Oh, wow. And can people come and watch
they
that?
They sure can. We would love for you to come out.
And for more information on JAM or to support it directly, where can people go?
JunoMusicMatters.com.
Okay, and I think before we go, we have one more thing to take care of.
Well, I just happened to bring the check along with me, so so here's the check here, and
thank you
so excited to be participating.
Thank you very much.
Laura Hege and Bob Rehfeld. Thanks, you two, for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you, Scott. Thank you.
listening to a Juneau Afternoon here on Thursday, December 14th, 2017. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 22 minutes after the hour. With me in the studio now is Hune Lance Twitchell and also Thichuk, Dr. Alice Taff. Welcome to the show, you two.
Goodness
cheese. Thank you for being here, and thank you for allowing us to be here. Can now you please correct me and introduce yourselves on how I pronounced your names?
Jock is my adoptive Doug Vainton name from John Martin.
Okay. My name is Chone, and I'm always happy to be working on the ancestral land of the Occoquan people.
Goodness, geez. I understand you two will be presenting tomorrow night as part of Evening at Egan, 7 o'clock, out at the university. You want to tell us about your title and what you'll be sharing?
Our title is something like Indigenous Language Use Benefits Health. And just so people don't wander into the Christmas Pops rehearsal in the library, we're at the other end of the building, closer to the parking lot at the Egan Lecture Hall.
Okay.
Yeah, and so one of the, I guess the title that we came up with in Tlingit was Naq Qatulayecha Yuqatungi. Let's use our language as medicine. And so Chuck is going to talk about the evidence out there supporting the idea that bringing an Indigenous language back to a healthy daily use is very healthy for people. And so a lot of the problems that we see in terms of diabetes, suicide, addictions, one of the most vital cures for that is bringing a language back to safety. And so she's going to talk about the evidence of studies that have been done, and then I'll talk about things in the language that can specifically be used for healing purposes and some ideas on things that I've seen where I've seen people get spiritually and emotionally stronger as they learn the language.
I'd like to ask you about that in a second. Dr. Taff, can you, how do you measure that?
There are two studies that I'll be referring to that compare language viability to particular health effects. And one of them was done in British Columbia at UBC. Michael Chandler and Christopher Lalonde looked at the wide discrepancy in suicide rates in First Nation villages in British Columbia. Why some villages had very low incidence of suicide and others very high. So they looked at a variety of factors in each village, and the only factor that could predict whether the suicide rate was high or low was language. And they found that in those communities where 50% of the people reported a conversational ability in their language, the suicide rate effectively dropped to zero.
Interesting.
Another one on diabetes in Alberta found the same thing for diabetes prevalence in First Nations villages in Alberta.
Hune, can you give us an example of when in your life the language has fostered wellness?
Yeah. Shukwayach tuasaku hasilko hasdat yuch achtetani. Washa yuch atungi tusi yechi. Konach hachank ayaye hasnatiji. One of the things that I think about is whenever we're making our language, our ancestors are coming to be by us. And so one of the things that I saw several years ago was some accounts in Australia, and they asked this elder there to talk about what's going on. And he says, well, you see those people that moved from our land into the city, and they're suffering, and they're they're living in poverty and they're going to jail and they're hurting themselves. And if you look out on the land is suffering. And we've got drought like we've never seen. And he says it's because the language was connecting them to the land, and the people are lonely for the land, and the land is lonely for the people. So really you're talking about kind of, it's like a basket that's come undone, and we're going to come and sort of put that basket back together. And so some of the things that I've seen in my life was, I was really close with my grandfather, and he passed away in 1997, and I'd been learning the language for about 2 years at that time. And then I just spun out of control because he was such a powerful influence for me. And without him, I found myself engaging in substance abuse and not doing anything for my people. And then I found beginning Tlingit, the tapes and the book, and I just kept listening and I kept trying. And every time I would try, I would think of my grandpa would be with me. And so it helped get me back on track. And then when I first met Nora and Richard Dauenhauer and got to thank them for all the work that they did, I really started thinking about the ways we build a community. And the things that I like to tell our students is, it's like we're on this island and we're safe. These things that have tried to hurt our people, they can't get us here. And these things that have been done, and the things I'm talking about, especially in genocide, is we can recover from those things by looking at the language and saying, this language was made for us. Everybody who's on this place that we call Tlingit country, it can benefit everybody. And so when we talk about the language and its healing properties and any language to bring it back, it's not just how are we going to help those native people. It's how are we going to help everybody, because there's these absences that are inside of us from these things that have happened. And I think restoring the language is looking and saying, at some point people tried to extinguish this language, and now we're going to move in a direction that opposes that and resists that, and it's going to help us all.
Dr. Taff, is your doctorate in linguistics?
Yes, it is.
And what has this meant for you, almost a lifetime of studying language here in this area? Has that been healing for you?
Well, I feel as if at least I'm doing something. And, I would say it keeps me healthy.
Okay. What's tomorrow night going to be like? 7 o'clock, right, in the lecture hall there at University of Alaska Southeast, 7 p.m.?
Yep, 7 p.m., and so we'll go for about 45, 50 minutes, and we'll have time for a discussion, and if people want to, you know. And so we're thinking of folks who are just interested, and maybe some folks are saying, well, how can I get the language in my home? How can I contribute to this growing language movement? And so those are the folks, and we want to say, well, here's the benefits, and also here's some things that you can do. And so we have, there's language classes at the university. There's language resources all over the place, tlingitlanguage.com, Sea Alaska Heritage, Gold Belt Heritage.
It's a wonderful workbook.
Yeah, there's a new Beginning Tlingit workbook that came out, and there's speakers that are out there that we're working with, and we're still documenting the language, translating things. And so we want people to know that you can get on the inside of this movement, and it's a lot of fun, and there's a lot of really good things going on.
Alice, anything you'd like to add to that?
No, but will we see you in Tlingit class?
I would like to. I'll be teaching creative writing out there next semester, and I would like to get into Tlingit class as well.
Yikai.
I have a lot to learn. Gunas chish. Thank you both so much for coming on the show today. We'll see you tomorrow, 7 p.m., in the Egan Lecture Hall out at UAS. Gunas chish.
Adu seek so Ya yinach yan de yan wasayati we kushit lakha we kushit lakha agwa ge ach sik awe hu awe hu awe adu sik sawe ya yinach sayati we kushit lakha we kushit lakha agwa ke ahsi awe ho awe ho awe adu sik sawe yayinach yan de yan wasayati wasayati we kushit lakha we kushit lakha agwa ke ahsi awe Sayati, we kushit lakha, we kushit lakha, agwa ke achsik awe, hu awe, hu awe.
Comes from the University of Alaska College Savings Plan, helping you and your child save for college every step of the way, from diapers to diploma. More information at uacollegesavings.com.
The only thing that separates us from the animals is our ability to accessorize.
Come see Steel Magnolias, where hair will be styled and lives analyzed, all with raucous humor and 80s music and fashion. Don't miss it.
At Perseverance Theater, December 1st through the 31st. Tickets at ptalaska.org, The Jack, and 463-TIXS.
Laughter through tears is my favorite emotion.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Thursday, December 14th. Scott Burton, your host, about 24 minutes until the top of the hour. And in the studio now is Gwen Bayless. She's the president of Juno Audubon. And also Nils Warnock. He is the director of Audubon Alaska. Welcome to the show, you two.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
And we're going to be previewing a show tonight, or a presentation tonight. Is that right?
7 o'clock at the university.
Okay. And what are you going to be talking about, Nils?
Well, I'll be talking about Audubon Alaska's watch list, which is our list of birds for the state that we think are either in decline or are vulnerable for various reasons.
Okay. Before we talk about that, though, why don't we learn a little bit more about Audubon Alaska? What's it look like?
Yeah. Oh, that's a great question. So we're part of National Audubon Society. We're one of, I think right now there's 24 official state offices. So those are generally paid staff. We have 10 staff that work here in Alaska. We focus mostly on sort of big public land issues. Arctic is a big area of interest for us. Arctic Refuge, the National Petroleum Reserve of Alaska, and then potential oil drilling out in the Arctic Ocean, and then the Tongass in the southeast is another big chunk of land that we're very engaged in trying to help shape policy that might affect our wildlife populations here.
Okay. And I sometimes think of Audubon as really bird-centric.
Yeah.
And I was thinking you said you're in 24 states. Are those flyway states where the most birds are? How would you describe that?
I think there are other Audubons that aren't affiliated with National Audubon under their 501c3. So a place like Massachusetts, independent Mass Audubon, Rhode Island Audubon, they predate National Audubon. Even though National is 100 years old, some of these other Audubons have been around even longer. So an Audubon name doesn't necessarily signify National Audubon sort of dues-paying member.
Okay. Gwen, what does Audubon in Juneau look like?
Well, we're a local chapter of the National Audubon Society, and we are an all-volunteer board, as he asked about earlier, and we focus on local issues and education and a lot of birding and bird watching trips, and we do programs like as we've invited Nils to do for us tonight.
Okay. Nils, can you give us a little preview, without giving away the presentation, about a few birds that we might recognize here in Juneau that might be in decline?
Yeah. Well, so tonight I'll go through what a watch list is, how we put it together. It's a very data-oriented product where we'll go through and we look at global numbers of a species. We look at their range in Alaska, what percentage of that population occurs in Alaska, and are they in decline? Do we have evidence that the population is in decline, which we weight heavily because we're interested in those that we suspect are either in decline or vulnerable. So we have a process where we evaluated 232 species. And I'll talk about sort of how we do that. I'll talk about some of the ones we're worried about and some of the ones that are, there's some real success stories too. And so we'll talk a little bit about that, like swans, some of the both trumpeter and tundra swans. Those populations are doing well. A lot of boreal forest species are not doing so well. So a species that Gwen and I were just talking about, greater scaup, is one that's on our watch list because there's pretty strong evidence of declines in pretty significant parts of their range.
Okay.
And that's a duck that we do see locally. And I should also mention, we're going to have the Christmas bird count on Saturday here in Juneau. I just wanted to get that out there and remind all birders and aspiring birders a chance to participate in this really important count. And this is information that does get used in some of these gauges of if a bird is declining or not to form some of these lists of what birds we might be concerned about. So this is a citizen science project that's really important that people participate in, and there is more information on the Juneau Audubon Society website, and that's Saturday and meeting at 8 o'clock at the McDonald's or at the IGA downtown, Valley McDonald's or downtown IGA.
And when is the actual meeting?
The count takes place on Saturday, this Saturday the 16th.
And would one just do that on their own throughout the day?
Yeah, it's an organized event, so there is more information on our website, and there are specific areas that we want to cover. And if you're a beginning birder, you can be teamed with one of the more experienced birders, and we kind of get our marching orders from the organizers, and we'll be covering those areas. It's pretty much all daylight hours. Actually, you can go owling at night too, but essentially it takes all day long, and
so
then
like
there's a potluck after.
Daylight hours.
And I think
a short day.
And Gwen, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's the 45th Christmas bird count for Juneau.
I actually don't know the answer to that, but it's been going for a while, and nationwide it's been going since 1900, so it's a big deal.
I like the idea that a beginner can get paired with an experienced bird watcher.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, so it's a learning opportunity as well.
As experienced bird watchers, I always like to ask you, what is it that draws you to birds? What is it you like about them so much?
Well, for me, it started as long back as I can remember, so almost 60 years ago. I was always fascinated by birds, and I didn't grow up with a bunch of bird watchers in the family, but we grew up in some great areas for watching birds, and I then sort of transformed that into, when I finished my undergrad degree, I went and worked for a bird observatory in California for a number of years, and really I've studied birds over the last 35 years, so they just fascinate me. I'm very interested in how birds move around in their landscape, so I've done a lot of work putting radios and satellite transmitters on birds, trying to understand movements both locally and globally. So they're really quite interesting creatures.
How about you, Gwen?
Yeah, I guess I grew up spending a lot of time outside and liked a lot of different natural things. I wasn't really that much into birds when I was younger because I didn't know anyone who birded, and it requires things like binoculars and supplies that I didn't have. But I got more interested in them late in high school, actually, from domestic birds and people bringing me these like baby wild birds to take care of and not knowing what to do and just trying to learn more that way. And then through that, I learned about bird watching, of, you know, seeing them in the wild, and that was so much more fun than trying to take care of them. So it's been a long time that I've been bird watching, and I continually evolve, learning more about them. And I guess it's kind of an addiction once you get started. You just want to learn more.
Probably a lifelong pursuit, right?
Definitely, yeah.
I hope so.
So learn more even tonight at 7 p.m., is that right?
7 p.m.
Yes, at the UAS 116, which is within the Recreation Center.
And you could probably learn more about participating on Saturday as well, right?
Yes.
That's right.
And if people want more information about Saturday, where should they go, Gwen?
To the Juneau Audubon Society website. And I would also recommend the Alaska State Audubon website for more about the watch list if someone can't make the show tonight.
All right. Nils or Gwen, anything else you'd add to the conversation?
No, I thank Gwen for bringing that up. We do have copies of the watch list on our website for people that can't make a talk and are interested in it. They can go there and download it and look at various lists from species that are in decline to ones that are common but still abundant here in the state. So
there's a Rufous hummingbird on the cover, which of course we do have locally.
Beautiful Rufous, yeah.
Thanks, you too.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. Christmas tree plantations may not be the best habitat for wild birds, but they do hold an attraction for northern saw-whet owls. These miniature owls seem to feel at home in the small evergreens. And when the birds are spotted, they're most likely to remain motionless rather than fly away. So it's not surprising that, a few years ago, a saw-whet owl in Oregon took a long, strange trip. In the middle of December, a lovely little evergreen was cut down on an Oregon tree farm. Turns out, this tree already had an ornament, a tiny saw-whet owl hunkered close to its trunk. the tree, owl and all, was wrapped in a mesh bag and off it went to British Columbia. The owl traveled in its needly prison in a stack of Christmas trees for a week or more. Imagine the surprise of the family who found it. Fortunately for that little owl, a wildlife rehabilitator nearby knew just how to take care of a hungry, dehydrated owl. It was nursed back to health and regained its life in the wild. So, if you buy a Christmas tree this year, you may get more than you bargained for. Hey, I hope I do. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann. Bird Note is flying south in March 2018. We'll experience Costa Rica's amazing birds and wildlife, and you can join us. More at birdnote.org.
It's not too late to download our Midnight Oil podcast. Alaska's Energy Desk traces the history of oil in Alaska and takes a peek into the future.
We have to decide what the narrative is, right? Are we all sort of watching Rome burn, or are we on the cusp of some sort of amazing transformation?
Visit KTOO.org or subscribe to Midnight Oil wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon on Thursday, December 14th. It's about 12 minutes till the top of the hour. In the studio now is Nancy DeCherney, the Executive Director of the Juno Arts and Humanities Council, over for our weekly edition of Arts Up to figure out all of our arts and entertainment opportunities this weekend. Welcome to the show, Nancy.
Thank you, and boy, do we have a lot. You know, there's only 7 more days until it starts getting lighter, and I'm looking forward to that. I don't know about you. So we've got the Advent lunches are going on. You missed that one for today, but it will be going on. We have Christmas tree and wreath sales. We have a gratitude circle. You just talked with the Audubon folks on tomorrow. It's the Christmas light flights where you get to fly around and go to Juno Airport Gate 1 at the north end. And this benefits the Juno's Children's Tumor Foundation and Lions Projects. It's sponsored by Coastal Helicopters and the Flying Lions. So it's always fun. No reservations. First come, first serve, weather permitting, of course. We have at 6:30 on Friday night until 9, the Wushkanadei Poetry Slam and open mic at Heritage Coffee downtown. Events are casual. You're invited to present your talents in written word. You can get more info at Poetry Slam, Juno Poetry Slam at gmail.com. At the evening at Egan, which you've talked about, I believe, the Indigenous Language and Health, Lance Twitchell will be talking about that. And at the this weekend we also have Steel Magnolias over at Perseverance Theater. It was lots of fun. That show was lots of fun. So don't miss it. It's running through the holidays. If you've got holiday guests in town, it's a great thing to go and do with them. Get your tickets because you know how it is. All of a sudden it'll be the end of December and you forgot. We have Juno Crimson Bears hockey at 8 p.m. on Friday night over at the Treadwell Ice Arena. The Bears are hosting the Colony Knights, so a little sporting activity there. Saturday morning at 9 a.m., Jingle Jog for Girls on the Run start at Floyd Dryden Middle School. Put on your Christmas gear and come run. I think this would be perfect for Christmas sweaters, the ugly sweater thing. You just put your Christmas sweater on because it's cold and wet and icky. The Girls on the Run participants, wear your T-shirt for free race entry. So anyway, from 9 to 12, we have Sumi Ink Drawing over at Color Wheel Inks. There's an arts and crafts fair at Mendenhall Mall from 10 to 6 p.m. There is a gingerbread house decorating at the Canvas with Kelly Manning from 10 to 4. Kids Books Day at Rainy Retreat, a huge sale on selected kids' books with prices starting at a quarter, and snacks and write your own book review section. So that sounds like fun at Rainy Retreats from 10 to 4. David Riccio, silk scarf painting. In case you're needing a gift idea, you could make a silk scarf for someone. Hockey again, 11:45. Let's see what else we got. upcycled wool gifts over at Color Wheel Arts. Quitting sugar and processed food. Ooh. This is the wrong season to give up sugar and processed food. But maybe you need to go to the Mendenhall Library at 4 and talk about that. Winter Wipeout at 7 p.m. at the Jack. Dankrup, Gamble, and the High Cost of Living, the Tongass Tokers. This is a full bar, silent auction. This is a fundraiser for Southeast Cancer Connection. It's at the Jack from 7 until 1 a.m. There's a barn dance at St. Anne's Parish Hall up 7:30 to 11. But we're doing holiday pops out at UAS. So if you're out in the valley and want something to do, a holiday pops. There's like 100 people singing in holiday pops this time. It's amazing. So it's lots of fun. Come out for that. And you have a second chance at that one, which is Sunday afternoon at the Jack. At 8 p.m., there's Alaska Beatdown number 30, Battle of the Belts, over at the Elizabeth Bradovich Hall. The Shriners Club's having a Christmas party at the Masonic Center from 1 to 4. As I said, we've got holiday pops again. And I will say the Sunday one is nearly sold out. So if you're interested in that one, better give us a call and get your tickets right now. On Tuesday, there's a Juno Cabaret at 5 p.m., Holiday Extravaganza at the Rockwell. And let's see, I think there's a talk about young rural women leading social transformation in traditional tribal stuff. So that's is downstairs in the K2 building there. And on Wednesday, again, there's a cabaret that got this on here twice, so I'm wondering about that. But it's a very busy week, and it's a holiday season, and we're looking for snow. Have fun with your friends and family. That's what I want to say about that.
And please remind us where we can see the whole wonderful curated list that you just shared with us.
Oh, you know, I forgot to mention on Saturday is the Kids' Day downtown. Trolley cars going everywhere all over town with activities for children. The Downtown Business Association is doing that. Go to jahc.org or ktoo.org and see the calendar and get all the details.
It's called Community Calendar, right?
Yep.
And if you want to get on it, is it easy,
There's
hard?
A little place to send that you can click and put stuff in there, or you can just send us an email. We'll get it on there.
What if somebody wants to support the Juno Arts and Humanities Council and endeavors like this? How can they do that?
Just send money. We can use volunteers as well. I'm still looking for volunteers, actually, for Saturday's show out at the university. But, yes, this is the season when being generous and giving is part of this the tradition. And all of the wonderful things that go on in this community, from our organization to Jazz and Classics to the Symphony to KTOO to just you name it, it happens because people are generous. So give me a call.
Thanks, Nancy.
Thanks.
Have you signed up for health insurance yet? Now is the time to get coverage. Health insurance allows you to get the care you need and protects you from high, unexpected medical costs. Sign up now because open enrollment for the Health Insurance Marketplace ends December 15th. If you miss this date, you may only be able to get coverage from a job, Medicaid, or a special enrollment event. You don't have to figure things out alone. For free local assistance, contact Search Outreach at 966-8883. We serve everyone.
Thanks for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon. Tomorrow, Andy Klein will be your host, and we'll talk with Natalie Watson about this week's Jingle Jog. We had a preview of this weekend's Dankrupt performance at the Winter Wipeout Music Festival. Dan Kirkwood will preview his new CD, and we'll get Bird Note music and more here on a Juno Afternoon. Looking at the weather here, the forecast for tonight calls for showers and a low around 38 degrees. And tomorrow, Friday, showers with a high near 38, southeast winds 5 to 15 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation is 80%. Going into Saturday, calls for rain before 3 p.m., then showers with a high near 40. And Sunday's forecast calls for showers, high near 37, with an 80% chance of precipitation. Thanks for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon.